Coastal shipping was seen as a saviour after Cyclone Gabrielle, but government backing for the sector has cooled. The government subsidised a coastal shipping route between Napier and Gisborne after the cyclone washed out roads connecting the two centres. And this followed a $30 million contestable fund Waka Kotahi doled out in 2022 to coastal shippers to help co-fund more ships. But the coastal shipping sector's at an impasse. A new government's in and there's no sign of further support like that received in 2022. Coastal shippers can move freight, more freight, per unit of fuel required, meaning lower emissions than trucking and less wear on the roads. Despite that, trucks move more than 90% of freight in New Zealand. Alistair Skingley is country manager for Swire Shipping, a Singapore-based company that runs two container ships between Auckland and Christchurch. Morning, Alistair. Thanks for coming in.
Morning, Catherine.
And with us too is John Harbert, who is Executive Director of the Shipping Federation. Kia ora, John. Welcome.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Alistair, tell us about Swire and what your operations are in New Zealand.
Swire, I did a bit of research actually, has been touching New Zealand since 1883. So we've been around a long time. And from then till now, we are a domestic shipping company now. Previous to that, we were an international shipping company, and we still are. It's not unusual if you went to Auckland to see four of our vessels sitting alongside. So we're very key to the whole of the supply chain in New Zealand.
If we're talking general freight movements, domestic general freight movements, and we leave out the international companies who come here, are you pretty much it?
Yes, we are. We had one vessel until 2022, and then we introduced a second vessel to improve our frequency between Auckland and Lyttelton.
So when you talk about four ships quayside at Auckland, that'll be two internationals and two locals, potentially.
Yeah, and we also operate a cement carrier around the coast as well.
Okay. Have there been others doing general freight movements, or are you pretty much it domestically?
Domestically at the moment, we're the only container shipping operator on the New Zealand coast.
All right. We'll come back to things like concrete and, you know, single goods in a moment. John, you might discuss that. But Alistair, what's the situation with the viability, I guess, the sustainability of the service you offer?
The sustainability of the service should be there. We have a lot of cargo moving north and south. In fact, most cargo in New Zealand goes from Auckland to Lyttelton. Moving it by ship is, as you've already said, the most sustainable way to do it. Using the Blue Highway, as they call it, is probably the easiest way to get cargo north and south. So sustainability outside the sort of the green issue is there. Why
aren't there more companies doing it? Why is it 90% done by road?
First thing, it's an expensive operation. Operating a vessel on the New Zealand coast is about between $4 and $5 million more expensive than operating a vessel deep sea. So there's your first barrier to entry. Why doesn't cargo move by sea? Well, it's frequency. If you want something tomorrow, you put it on a plane or a truck. If you want something the day after tomorrow, you put it on rail. If you need something within 3 days and it's heavy, the most sensible way to move it is by vessel.
So you need to be organised. You have to have a logistics plan that makes sense. Just-in-time delivery will happen, but it won't happen overnight, so to speak.
That's correct, and which is why we bought the second vessel.
So who would you say are some of your biggest users by industry or by product?
So our business is segmented two ways. So we actually support the main shipping lines, because they maybe only call one port in New Zealand, so we move cargo between...
These are the internationals.
That's the international lines, that's correct. And then there's a domestic movement. So FMCG, things like beverages, food, Mile of 10, your Bunnings, this type of stuff that comes from Auckland into the South Island.
Is it often because it's quite bulky or best done in containers? Is that the advantage over trucks?
Yes, if you have the ability to fill one container, it's easier just to pick that one container up, put it on a ship and take it off at the other end.
Mm. So there's a barrier to entry cost-wise, on the cost side of the equation. Ideally, for a business, that would be offset by revenue.
Yes.
What are the issues with revenue?
That's the problem. This is why we become uncompetitive with our competition, which are the large shipping companies who make calls along the coast.
So these are the internationals. They will come in bringing goods to Auckland, probably, or Tauranga, but they will also do domestic work around the ports as they get around the country.
That's correct, yes.
And why is there a competition issue with them?
Cost, effectively. Legislation as well. As a domestic operator, we're obliged to pay ETS on fuel, emissions trading scheme.
The internationals aren't?
And internationals aren't.
How will this proposed change to bring international shipping into our carbon budget? That doesn't automatically mean there's any tax or levy, does it? It just means now we're counting these international movements, but it would be a separate move to bring them into our scheme.
That's correct.
What are the other areas?
GST. So everything that we do, we're susceptible to GST, whereas international operators aren't.
What difference did the government Waka Kotahi Fund make, if any, to your operations?
Huge. It allowed us to move a second vessel in, effectively doubled our capacity overnight.
Is that still operating?
It is still operating. It is a struggle. Primarily when we brought the ship in 2022, New Zealand was booming. The rest of the world was booming. The cargo was there. We had berth windows in ports. Now, a berth window is the time that you're allowed in each port. We had those. The world exploded in a good way. A lot of cargo coming in. The terminals weren't able to maintain berth windows. They took the berth windows away.
We ended up with ships floating off at sea waiting to get into port.
Exactly. So it's impact to everybody, international operators as well. But for coastal operators, when you have a weekly product, whereby if you're going to be in Auckland on a Friday and in Lyttelton on a Sunday, the supply chain for large customers is built around arriving on those dates.
Has it normalised, that domestic supply, port access, port window, has it normalised?
It has, okay. It has. In the last 6 months, it's got there.
So did that government funding help you through that crunch? Or does it have, at a time where everyone wants government funding and government doesn't want to give any out, what role, if any, might it play at the moment for a business like yours, or rather for encouraging more transport this way?
If there was funding available, and that's a massive if, it would be to level the playing. Our initial request would be to level the playing field between us and international operators. We wouldn't need funding if we had that. We are working with the government to try in different ways to see what we can do there. Until that happens, and changing legislation takes a long time, getting us across the short term would help.
So basically, government funding would account for what you miss out on or your disadvantage with the ETS and GST part of the equation.
Correct. Yes.
John Harbert, if I can bring you in, Executive Director of the New Zealand Shipping Federation, why don't we have more operators like this? Is there anything other than what Alistair said?
No, I think the key reason is we had more operators right through the last century up until the deregulation of the 1990s, which sort of opened up the coast. So, and it's that sort of non-level playing field in terms of competition that has seen the domestic operators sort of essentially competed out of the market. So the other factors in terms of that playing field is the international operators, they base themselves out of countries where they pay little or no corporate tax anywhere. The remuneration for their seafaring crew is a little bit over half of what New Zealand operators pay, and then you've got the ETS and GST costs as well. So it's extremely hard to compete on price with people who have all those advantages. So we've just seen a gradual erosion of the domestic capability.
We mentioned earlier the disaster response, and particularly as it applied to Cyclone Gabrielle, but there are other examples, Kaikoura earthquake, other examples as well. Will we have that resilience if we don't build up, or if we risk losing the operators we have now?
The short answer is no. So a lot of New Zealand's regional communities are served by a single highway or a single rail link. And if those links go down, those communities are isolated. And we are a coastal country. The one point of access we know we will always have is by sea. And if we don't have domestic operators operating the types of ships that can get into those regional ports, then we lose the ability to have resilient communities.
How significant was, strategically, was that Waka Kotahi investment? I'm just reading of another case here late last year. I think Move Logistics was going to do a co-investment with Waka Kotahi to bring in a methanol-capable vessel that could do ports. I think that fell over in the end, that move. Right.
Yes.
So how significant strategically was that investment, and is there a need for another one if this sector is going to grow?
The investment was really important at that time because it was sort of a shot in the arm that sort of reinvigorated the industry. But more important than sort of a one-off contestable fund is the regulatory and legislative settings that enable the industry to compete. So that's levelling the playing field, and there's different ways we can go about doing that. The New Zealand operators are subject to a lot of regulation, and they're also very, very cost sensitive. So the maritime levy, for instance, that Alistair pays, this year it's going up 30%.
What's the maritime levy for?
It funds Maritime New Zealand, who's the industry regulator.
Do the internationals have to pay that?
Not so much. So again, it's when you're really cost sensitive and your prices are going up, that imposes another disadvantage.
Are we at risk of losing your service? I've come back to Alistair Skingley now.
Catherine, the answer to that is no. We as a business have invested in New Zealand. But there may become a point where we have to reduce it to a level that is not where New Zealand or we want it to be.
So if an incoming government in straitened times and with a full plate were to think about its strategy broadly with respect to coastal shipping, which is part of a transport system, God knows how many reports we've had into the logistics of a transport system, but if it were to make some sensible measures that would make a difference right now, what would they be?
The first thing would be a rethink or a relook at BETS. The second, and I'm not saying we take it away or put it take it away from us and give it to the or impose it on the domestic and the international operators. It's more about we have to compete in the same environment. So either give it or take it, one of the two. GST should be applicable across all moves. The other issue that we have is our ability to dry dock ships. Every 5 years, a vessel has to go and be taken out of the water. There's nowhere in New Zealand where we can do that. That's a very, very costly exercise to take it to China or what have you. And I know there's a piece of work on a dry dock in Northport.
Look, we've been talking about the ports, John Hubbard, since before you and I were born. Whether we've got too many, whether they're competing rather than cooperating, on and on and on, whether Auckland's one should be in Auckland or somewhere else. Same question to you. Are we at risk of a shrinking of the sector and its role if there's not some strategic thinking pretty soon?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you both, Alistair Skingley, and thanks also John Harbord.